Hello, this is Debbie back again reading the Decatur Herald and Review e-edition on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016. Starting out with ADM seeks improved results. Luciano notes company positioned well for 2017. Chicago. Oh, and this is by Chris Lusvardi, a staff writer for H&R. Archer Daniel Midland's company reported financial results Tuesday that were down from last year, but improving as this year draws closer to conclusion. ADM reported net earnings for the third quarter of $341 million, or 58 cents per share, compared with $252 million, or 41 cents per share, in the same period of 2015. Adjusted earnings per share for the quarter were 59 cents per share compared with 60 cents per share last year. ADM Chairman, President, and CEO Juan Luciano said the company is moving in an improved direction as it looks ahead to next year. After working through the challenging environment in the first half of the year, we capitalized on improving operating conditions in the third quarter and are positioned well for a solid finish to the year, Luciano said in a conference call with industry analysts. With improving market conditions and a large U.S. harvest, combined with the team's solid execution capabilities, we feel good about the remainder of the year and a stronger 2017, end quote. As part of its effort to improve results, Luciano said ADM is undergoing a multi-year global investment transformation. It will standardize business practices at its operations around the world, he said. So far, Luciano said, the program is delivering on time and under budget. However, the plan will cost money that will be included as part of its capital expenses, said Ray Young, Chief Financial Officer. Young said, our spending will increase as we ramp up the program. We're working through what the actual spend will be. We're going to reinvest in the company with savings in order to make the company stronger for the future, end quote. ADM's capital spending this year has been lower than the previous year. As Young said, it's expected to spend below $1 billion. It has returned $1.3 billion to shareholders in dividends and share buybacks through the first 9 months of the year, along with implementing nearly $250 million of new run rate savings actions, Luciano said. It expects to exceed a $275 million savings target by the end of the year, he said. Additionally, Luciano said ADM is making progress in a review of its ethanol dry mill assets. It received proposals from 7 interested properties, with a lower number invited to submit final proposals by the end of the year, he said. Luciano said it's premature to speculate how the changes will factor into next year's earnings. He said ethanol continues to be a strong product for exporting. Bioproducts results were flat for the quarter with lower ethanol earnings, Luciano said. Results for the Wild Flavors specialty ingredients business were mixed, Luciano said. ADM is attempting to build a portfolio of products for health-conscious consumers, but Luciano said it faced some challenges that have been highlighted in recent quarters. As a result, Luciano said, a new organizational structure is being considered. We are addressing the issues aggressively, he said. It will align with other areas in the company. We have teams working through the details. Luciano said the fourth quarter is typically a low-volume period for the business. End of that article. Next article. Headline, acute nurse shortage. School district health care requires extensive resume, versatile skills. This is by Valerie Wells, another staff writer for H&R. Decatur, being a school nurse is more than just handing out ice packs and Band-Aids. We're an advocate for the child and family in the school system, said Angie Wetzel, coordinator of health services for the Decatur School District. We make sure they have all the immunizations, or if they don't, we help them do that. And if they can't get them for medical or religious reasons, we make sure they get the right forms and information so the student can remain in school. Our job is to keep children healthy in school. In Decatur, 11 full-time nurses and one part-time nurse serve 9,000 students, Wetzel said. Nurses are assigned according to building needs, with one nurse at MacArthur High School full-time serving 1,000 students and other nurses assigned to more than one building. To be a school nurse requires a bachelor's degree in nursing plus additional classes toward a professional educator's license with an emphasis in school nursing. So few schools offer the courses, and nurses have such a wide variety of opportunities available that school nurses are in short supply, Wetzel said. The National Education Association and the National Association of School Nurses estimate that in Illinois there's one school nurse per 2,893 students. And the school nurse is different from the licensed practical nurses who work for the Macon-Piatt Special Education District to care for medically fragile students, said Kathy Horeth, executive director. I employ LPNs who also have an associate's degree to function as teaching assistants and one-on-one nurses for students with serious health needs. At Harris School, where most of the medically fragile students are enrolled, there is a regular school nurse because emergencies sometimes arise that are beyond the authority of the LPN. One of the LPNs is a roving nurse who fills in when an assigned nurse is sick. And sometimes a nurse's student is too ill to attend school, and that nurse can then be assigned to a different student temporarily so that all the students have a nurse who need one. Christy Worrell said she has always wanted to be a school nurse because her mother was one. She works at South Shores, Dennis and Oak Grove Schools. I love my job, but I wish we could have a nurse at each building, she said. Students under her care include children with organ transplants, chronic conditions such as diabetes or cancer, children with feeding tubes or tracheotomies, allergies that could be life-threatening, plus the usual scrapes and accidents that happen at school. Worrell, therefore, makes it her business to know as much as possible about every child. With three buildings, that means a lot of extra time reading files and talking to parents. One year, I had a child who had a bite on the arm, and I kept looking at it, and it started spreading, she said. I called the parents, and they took the child to the hospital, and they ended up flying the child to St. Louis. It was a bacterial infection that was eating away at the flesh. You have to be able to recognize signs and symptoms of diseases and be aware of it. I love being a school nurse. It's all I ever wanted to be, and I don't plan on retiring. End of article. Next article. Scott denies misconduct allegations. State's attorney fires back in court filings. This is by Ryan Voiles, an H&R staff writer. Decatur. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott pushed back against the allegations of misconduct in court documents filed Tuesday. Scott, who finds himself in a heated re-election campaign against Decatur attorney Dan Hassinger, filed the three petitions Tuesday morning as a legal response to petitions to request a special prosecutor to investigate claims of misconduct during Scott's tenure and to remove Scott's attorney for a conflict of interest. Aside from denying the accusations of misconduct, Scott asserted the claims made against him were politically motivated and should be thrown out. He cited Facebook posts in support of Hassinger by the two former state's attorney's employees who provided affidavits in the case, as well as by John Davis, the attorney who filed the initial petition on behalf of County Board member Greg Mattingly. The intent of the petition is to publicly defame Scott's professional reputation and personal character for political gain, Scott said in response to petition. When asked about the filing, Scott called them a legal response, quote, to set the record straight, unquote, and to allow his attorney the ability to enter into the petition for a special prosecutor. In his 10-page response to the initial petition for a special prosecutor, Scott argued that violating the employee handbook is not the same as violating law, and therefore citing the former cannot be used to support any allegations of official misconduct. Further, Scott said, employees who are required to carry cell phones are allowed to use them for personal reasons, as it does not result in any additional cost to the county. The response petition also states that the use of county vehicles for county business is not illegal, and that on rare occasions the vehicles can be approved for use, such as picking up an employee's child when the former is required to be at a court for a trial or hearing. Scott said this practice will not come and has gone on since before he took the office. Where the original petition listed incidents of electioneering in his office, Scott argued that neither affidavits filed show Scott had any knowledge of the activity until after it occurred, nor proves he participated in, encouraged, or permitted the act. In regard to any conflict of interest with his attorney, Scott's petition cited the opinion of Peter Rostkoff, Chief of Litigation and Professional Education for the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, that no actual conflict exists. The final pages of Scott's petition narrowed in on what he has previously referred to as, quote, gutter politics, unquote, at the root of the issue. Although the alleged incidents in the affidavits occurred between January 2015 and May 2016, Scott said it was notable that neither were brought to light until 6 weeks before the November election. Aside from calling the two former employees who filed the affidavits, quote, disgruntled, unquote. Scott, a Democrat, goes after Davids and Mattingly for both being supporters of Hassinger. Scott's petition noted Facebook posts made by Davis in which he has pledged his support for Hassinger, as well as when Mattingly, a Republican member of the county board and former chairman of its justice committee, walked in a parade in support of Hassinger while wearing a shirt for Scott's Republican challenger. Mattingly said he did, in fact, walk in a parade at the Blue Mound Fall Festival, but he was already in attendance and only walked at the request of Macon County Republican Chairman Bruce Pillsbury. Mattingly rejected Scott's claim that the petition for special prosecution was politically motivated, citing his past support for Democrats such as fellow county board member Jay Dunn for county chairman and Steve Langoff's 2012 bid for state's attorney as proof he's not motivated by party. I think you can look at my past and figure out that I'll vote my conscience, whether or not it fits my party affiliation, Mattingly said. He reiterated his past statements that the petition for a special prosecutor was filed after he heard from past and current employees who had expressed concern and misconduct in Scott's office. The issue is a particularly awkward one, Mattingly said, because normally he would have taken these concerns to the state's attorney himself. I filed the petition because where else do you go when the person who's supposed to be the legal advisor to the board and enforcing the law is the one whom the allegations were made against, he said. Hassinger and the Republican Party have denied any involvement with the petition for a special prosecutor. When asked about Scott's filing, Hassinger said it was odd his appointment would not welcome a special prosecutor, adding that voters cannot reelect a person who even has the appearance of impropriety. Clearly, Scott has taken the position that the laws of state of Illinois and rules do not apply to him, Hassinger said. A special prosecutor has not yet been appointed to investigate the claims against Scott. A hearing on the petition to remove Scott's attorney for a conflict of interest is set for December 1st. End of that article by Royals. And the last article on page one of the November 2nd e-edition for the Decatur Herald and Review. Rauner gets passing grade with pot group. Illinois chapter notes governor's pro-business stances for his support. This is by Dan Petrella, the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield, when it comes to pro-pot policy, Governor Bruce Rauner is earning a passing grade, if not one that would be proudly displayed on the refrigerator. In its first ever gubernatorial scorecard, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, N-O-R-M-L, gave Rauner B-, putting him ahead of his fellow Republican governors in neighboring Wisconsin, Indiana, and Iowa, on par with Democrat Jay Nixon of Missouri and Republican Matt Bevin of Kentucky. Only two governors, Oregon's Kate Brown and Vermont's Peter Shumlin, both Democrats, received an A. The highest grade was only awarded to governors who have publicly supported legalization for recreational use. NORML graded Rauner favorably based on his signing of two pieces of pro-marijuana legislation, a law decriminalizing possession of small amounts of the drug, and another extending the drug's medical marijuana pilot program till 2020. Rauner signed both bills this summer after vetoing previous versions last year. The governor's office declined to comment on the grade. Dan Lynn, executive director of the Illinois chapter of NORML, said that while the state organization wasn't consulted in producing the scorecard, quote, we see these pieces of legislation as steps in the right direction, unquote. Like the national organization, the Illinois chapter of NORML continues to advocate for the legalization of marijuana for recreational use by adults. Given Rauner's emphasis on improving the state's business climate and reducing regulation, it would make sense for him to support legalizing marijuana, said Lynn, who also serves as a general manager of Champaign Medical Marijuana Dispensary, Phoenix Botanical. Doing so would create jobs, attract investment, and bring in additional revenue for the state, he said, adding, quote, it seems to be solving a lot of problems that the governor has been working toward since he was elected, unquote. Marijuana remains illegal under federal law, and opponents of legalization raise concerns about possible social costs. Voters in Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, Washington State, and Washington, D.C. have already approved legalization referendums, and the issue will be on the ballot Tuesday in Arizona, California, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada. So far, no state legislature has approved recreational use of marijuana outside of a ballot initiative, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. That's what would have to happen in Illinois, where voters have virtually no ability to legislate at the ballot box. State Representative Ken Duncan, Democrat, Chicago, sponsored a legalization measure last year, but it went nowhere. With Duncan wrapping up his tenure following a defeat in the March Democratic primary, Normal is looking for a new sponsor, Lynn said. State Rep. Lou Lang, Democrat Skokie, sponsored the bill that created Illinois' medical marijuana program, which was set to expire at the end of next year, and the extension that Rauner signed this summer. Lang said he's not backing legalization for recreation use at this time. Quote, it may be in the future of Illinois that we legalize the sale of cannabis, but that is not on my radar screen at the moment, unquote, Lang said, continuing his comments. I want to make sure the medical program works the way I anticipate it, that it includes as many of our sickest people as possible. Well, he said Rauner deserves credit for agreeing to extend the medical marijuana program. Lang also noted the administration has routinely ignored an advisory board's evidence-based recommendations for expanding the program to cover additional conditions. As part of the compromise with Rauner administration, the board was reconstituted and will no longer make recommendations that have to be approved or denied by the director of Illinois Department of Public Health. The director will make those decisions in consultation with department staff. That's the end of the article by Petrella. Continuing to the local section, Mitchell seeks another term. Lawmaker touts work for taxpayers, Dems candidate not on trail. This is by Chris Lasvardi, a staff writer for H&R, which you know. Forsyth, State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican Forsyth, is hoping to continue the work that has been started in resolving what he sees as two top issues facing the state in his legislative district. Having served in the House since 1999, Mitchell is seeking re-election for another term. He faces an opponent, Christine Law, a Democrat from Forsyth, who has not actively campaigned for the position. The race is in the 101st House District, which covers all or parts of Macon, DeWitt, Piatt, McLean, and Champaign counties. Mitchell said his focus is on addressing the state budget woes and finding a way to keep Exelon's Clinton Power Station open. Quote, Illinois has become a bad joke, but we've got a great state, unquote, Mitchell said, and continuing said, we've got to get serious about addressing the problems. We can't play games anymore. The budget deficit and unpaid bills are continuing to drag the state down with a broad impact, Mitchell said. We've never been in worse shape. We can't continue to spend money we don't have. Now we've got a fiscal train wreck. Mitchell said keeping the Clinton Power Station nuclear power plant open is the top priority to keep the hundreds of jobs as it provides in the area, along with tax revenue generated for entities including the City of Clinton, Clinton School District, and Richland Community College. His one concern is the price tag for reaching a deal, which could become too high. An agreement won't be reached. Exelon continues to meet with various interest groups, which Mitchell said is a sign a deal is still possible. The issue could be discussed during the upcoming November veto session, he said. My biggest goal is keeping those jobs throughout the whole area, Mitchell said. That's an immediate focus. Mitchell, who's never been in the majority party, hoping the ideas he proposed can ultimately benefit taxpayers. He introduced a taxpayer bill of rights in 2003, proposing the Illinois budget can't grow without an increase in population or adjustment for inflation. If that measure had been successful, Mitchell said, the state could have had a budget surplus. After serving for nearly 18 years, Mitchell is taking a After serving for nearly 18 years, Mitchell is taking a one election at a time approach and not looking too far ahead with a long list of goals to accomplish. I hope I have served with honor, Mitchell said. I will continue to do that. The election is Tuesday. End of article by Lasvardi. Under a wonderful picture of very happy people and a sign being filmed is Dove Shelter Becomes a Home. Improvements including kitchen made possible by grant volunteers. This is by Teresa Churchill, a senior writer for H&R. Decatur, in her 28th supervising Dove Incorporated, in her 28 years supervising Dove's Incorporated domestic violence shelter, only Patty Plato's closest friends called her Patty Cake. With the unveiling of Patty Cake's kitchen as part of the newly remodeled shelter, her nickname is no longer a secret known by a select few. The turn of events was also a complete surprise to her. Plato, who retired March 31st at age 63, was among more than 60 people who attended a Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce ribbon cutting Tuesday to celebrate the improvements made possible by a $7,500 ADM CARES grant from Archer Daniels Midland Company and a volunteer effort by Lowe's employees. She may have had an inkling something was up when Christine Gregory, Dove's executive director since March 1st, talked about the bucket list Plato shared with her about what she wished she could do to make the shelter one last difference. I want to thank Patty Plato, even though I've only had her for 30 days of my time here, for being an inspiration to all of us," Gregory said before making her a snip to the ribbon. Once the ribbon was cut and Plato went inside to see the revamped kitchen and other improvements, Terry Ducey, director of the domestic violence program, sprung the surprise by having someone remove a cloth hiding the new sign above the kitchen entrance. The applause, cheers, and laughter that followed lasted nearly 30 seconds. "I love it, I love it," Plato exclaimed. "I have to talk to the ladies and make sure they keep it clean." In many ways, a kitchen is the center of a home, and the former shelter supervisor couldn't help but admire the peach-painted walls, two new dishwashers, new sink, and all new cabinets. "Look at all this storage space. It's fantastic," she said. Other changes included new paint for 9 of the shelter's 11 bedrooms and new floors for 6 of them. A new ground cover was also added to the playground outside. Another upgrade, updated light fixtures and a neutral color for the walls of the piano room Great Hall, eliminated the last vestiges of how the building's interior looked when Dove bought the former Anna B. Milliken home in 2007. Also standing at the ribbon, besides Chamber President Miranda Rothrock, were Lowe's manager Dave Osier and assistant manager Michelle Cornett, ADM Cares director Jennifer Ballinger, and Decatur City Councilman Pat McDaniel. Ducey, however, was last to speak. "I'm overwhelmed," she said, "to all the people who showed up today, to ADM, to Lowe's. This wouldn't have been possible without your generosity. For our clients, we always thought they had a home, but now they really have a home." End of that article. Next, Blue Mound Township eyes tax increase. This is by Valerie Wells again. Blue Mound: approval of the increased tax rate for Blue Mound cemeteries won't necessarily mean residents will pay more. More than 25 years ago, Illinois set a maximum property tax levy amount of 0.20 per hundred equalized assessed valuation. At that time, Blue Mound Township didn't raise its rate from 0.08, choosing to work with the budget already in place. But as the years have passed and maintenance costs have gone up, the trustees have found that more difficult. "We have perpetual care, and it just doesn't cover everything that needs to be done for appearance and maintenance," Township Supervisor Marcia Pertofka said. "We are now forced to raise the maximum rate, but not necessarily the amount to levy. It gives us flexibility. We have over $20,000 in maintenance costs for 6 cemeteries, the most number of any township in the county, and we collect $16,000. The property tax levy for this year already has been set and is about $30 for a $100,000 home. Even if voters approve raising the rate to the state's maximum allowance of 20 cents, Petrovka said the board doesn't plan to raise the levy to the maximum next year. "We're not raising the levy for a tax increase. We're raising the maximum levy amount rate. It's like raising the ceiling. Then you have this margin to work in now. We're at the maximum right now, and we want to raise the maximum rate to equal what the state allows." Except for the mowing, she said, the trustees do the work, such as a storm cleanup, meeting with monument companies and families. "Each trustee is paid $700 a year and puts in a lot of time with those tasks at the 6 cemeteries. If the measure doesn't pass," Pertofka said, "the board will be forced to raise lot prices, and they don't want to have to do that. We don't do any outside sales," she said. "We don't sell flower arrangements and flags like the bigger cemeteries do, and we don't do marketing. It's kind of frustrating. I hate that we have to go to taxpayers and ask for a rate increase, but we don't have another option." End of that. Last main article on the local front page by Huey Freeman, a staff writer for H&R. "Man accused of abuse after toddler's arm broken." Decatur. A 26-year-old Decatur man is being held in jail on a $300,000 bond on 4 felony charges for allegedly breaking the upper arm bone of a 1-year-old boy. The injury was likely to have occurred about 5:10 p.m. October 8th when James Sunweek picked the boy up from a car seat in his vehicle by grabbing him by his arm and picking him over the seat, Sunweek told police. Doctors diagnosed the injury is a spiral fracture to his left humerus. Spiral fractures occur when torque, a force of rotation, is applied to the bone. The doctors advised this injury is consistent with abuse, Ethel wrote in his statement. Dr. Channing Petrock of the Pediatric Resource Center of Peoria told police the toddler demonstrated immense pain when moving his arm. The child's mother reported to police that someone picks up the child by grabbing him by one arm, describing a forceful yank. Instead of bending down to pick him up, he grabs him by arm and yanks him to himself. She said the boy was fine when she was with him at a birthday party at a fast food restaurant just before Senkwa picked him up. Surveillance video at the restaurant, viewed by the police, showed the toddler was apparently free of pain at that time, as he used his left arm to receive food and was picked up from the high chair and handed back and forth between people holding him. Sunquist explained to police that he pulled the child out of the vehicle by his left arm and does so because the front seat's bulky, making it hard to get back to the rear seat of his two-door extended cab GMC truck. He said he frequently grabs him by his upper left arm. When he grabs him, he lifts him about 2 feet in the air. His entire weight's suspended at the time by his arm, then twists his hand on the top of the arm to easily pulling him from the seat. Someone said he did not feel the child's arm break under the force of grabbing and suspending him. He said there was no other explanation for the child's injuries. Sunquist was arrested October 28th and booked in the Macon County Jail. He was arraigned Tuesday on two counts of aggravated battery of a child and one count each of aggravated domestic battery and reckless conduct. He is due in court for his preliminary hearing November 9th. Continuing with briefs, Decatur, drug buying robbery. A man dropped by Decatur Police Headquarters Monday to complain he had been pistol whipped and robbed while trying to buy drugs. And he said he knew two of the suspects by their nicknames Humpty Dumpty and Fat Boy. The 24-year-old victim told police the robbery happened at 9 p.m. Sunday in the 200 block of South Hayworth Avenue near the intersection with Macon Street. Written reports said Humpty Dumpty and Fat Boy were among three men who pulled up in the car, brandished a handgun, pistol-whipped the victim with it, and stole $100 from him before driving away. The report said the victim had abrasions on his face consistent with having been assaulted. Next, Argenta. Veterans Day Parade. Veterans Day festivities in Argenta Saturday, November 5th will include a parade and a barbecue sandwich lunch. The Friends of Argenta's parade steps off at 11 a.m. from Argenta Oriana High School with the luncheon following at the old grade school at 275 North Kenwood Street. Veterans and anyone else who would like to be in the parade should contact Dina Bowman either at her email, dina1159@aol.com, dina1159@aol.com, or 521-6081, 521-6081. The price of lunch is a donation, but veterans and their spouses eat free. There will also be a bake sale and a quilt raffle. Next, Decatur, Lincoln's Homestead. Mark Sorensen will talk about Abraham Lincoln's first homestead in Illinois at 4 p.m. Saturday, November 5th at the Governor Oglesby Mansion, 431 West William Street. Updates will be presented on the improvements made to the Lincoln Trail Homestead State Park and Memorial. The program is free and part of the mansion's History Come Alive series. That's the end of the briefs there on the Local's first page. We'll finish part one of the Decatur Herald and Review. Continuing with the sort of nation state. Clinton revisits Trump's comments about women's. King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. This is an AP report. With just a week to go in the race for the White House tightening, Hillary Clinton, with help from President Barack Obama, unleashed a fresh offensive Tuesday against Donald Trump and his vulgar comments about women. Trump strove to blend a quieter presidential tone with his usual tough rhetoric, warning that a Clinton victory would, quote, destroy American health care forever, unquote. The White House contenders clashed from afar, Clinton in the battleground Florida and Trump in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, with the sprint to next Tuesday finish well underway. For my entire life, I've been a woman, Clinton, who would be the nation's first female president, declared in critical Florida. And when I think about what we now know about Donald Trump and what he's been doing for 30 years, he sure spent a lot of time demeaning, degrading, insulting, and assaulting women. Trump has faced multiple allegations of sexual misconduct in recent weeks, complicating his efforts to win over women in both parties. He has denied every accusation, but Obama said there was a pattern at work which voters needed to pay heed. This is a lifetime of calling women pigs and dogs and slobs, Obama said. That part we're concerned about is if he starts acting like this is normal. For Trump, he spent the day relentlessly on message, eschewing wild tangents and political fights in favor of carefully scripted remarks focused on health care and attacks on his opponent. So this is the end of what we will read in part one for the e-edition of the Decatur Herald and Review on November 2nd, 2016. This is Debbie saying I'll talk to you again soon.